Anna David. I am the host and creator of this very podcast, which you probably know because who else would be talking but the host? That being said, I never give you guys an intro. I'm going to give you an intro today. I'm a New York Times bestselling author of 6 books, most of which are, quite frankly, about addiction, even if they don't say it in the title. I speak at colleges about addiction and recovery. I speak on television about these things, and I created the website The After Party Group, and that is made up of After Party Chat, which has all sorts of articles about addiction and recovery. They may have even led you to this podcast. I don't know. It is also made up of After Party Treatment, which lists all the treatment centers in California. And it is made up of After Party Pod, this very podcast, where every week that I do it, which is to say every other week. By the way, did you know biweekly means both twice a month and twice a month and twice a week? Ah, I can't remember. It means something. Google it. Let me know. Which reminds me, I love hearing from you guys. I love it when you tweet at me and tell me that you like this podcast. And the only thing I would love more is if you could go to iTunes and give us a 5-star review, because that is going to help other people find this podcast. Also, if you can share it and tag me or at me or include me so that I can retweet it so that other people, or you can just tell your friends. You don't have to be all multimedia 2014. You could just simply, you could tell someone, you could write someone a letter. You could send someone a telegram, I think, about this. I just want people to find it because I am truly inspired by it. And I am trying to do whatever I can to erase the stigma about addiction and recovery. And I think things like this do that. Now, my guest today is none other than Kristen Johnston. Yeah, you guys, I'm not screwing around. I land the big guns here. Obviously, you know who Kristen is. She was the star of Third Rock from the Sun for years. She is now the star of The X's, which is on TV Land Wednesdays at 10 p.m. She has been in everything under the sun, including Sex and the City, where obviously she was like the voice of doom. She was like the reason Carrie Bradshaw had to reexamine her partying lifestyle because Lexi Featherstone fell and died partying. Very apropos for the topic of this very podcast. Anyway, Kristen is also the best-selling author of Guts, and that is a book about her addiction and recovery. And if you think, if you dare to think it's one of those, oh, another celebrity wrote about her addiction, who cares? You're so wrong. How dare you even think that? It's an incredible book. This girl can write, and she actually wrote the book herself as opposed to a couple other hundred thousand people out there. And she's written about addiction and recovery for a number of publications, including the New York Times, and she goes around the world and talks about addiction and recovery, and she has started an organization that is determined to bring the first sober high school to New York called SLAM. You can follow her on Twitter at Kajo the Smartass. You can also follow me on Twitter. Have we talked about that? I can't even remember. At Anna After Party. Now, enough of me. I will now give you Kristen Johnston. Are we going?
Yeah, we're going.
Yeah. And then I hear a dog snoring. It's very peaceful. Okay, Kristen, what
Anna,
a pleasure.
I know, you too.
Sitting
Thanks
here
for bringing me my coffee.
Oh, it was my pleasure. I just feel like I haven't seen you in probably a year or
right,
so.
When we did that thing in for Guts, that thing in the on the Pacific. It was so sweet.
It was. But everything was so highly stressed with that environment.
Yeah.
So since that time, Guts has come out in paperback. It was not in paperback yet.
Right. Yeah.
And your New York Times story had not come out yet.
Well, I had one New York Times story.
The one
I wrote, yes, yeah. It came out a couple months ago. Yeah.
I just reread that summer. This morning.
Yeah, it's good, right?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting.
Just about media and addiction and how the media treats addiction, if you want to Google it.
So and so the reason you wrote that is that basically you did a story, you were talking about Guts, you were and a clip of what you said.
No. I was talking about my TV show, The X's.
Okay.
In a long article to TV Guide.
Right.
Okay. So I'm talking and talking about The X's. And at the very end, they say, and well, how's Guts doing? And I answer, you know, da da da, this or that. I say two sentences about
right.
it. Suddenly, it's a headline. Actress admits to being a total booze and drug addict or whatever. And I was just like, that was 2 years ago. I mean, you know.
Right.
I'm out of the closet, guys.
Yeah, exactly. Written a best-selling book about it, guys.
Yeah.
It's not headline news.
Yeah, it's not headline news. And the way they did it, and also the fact that when I was promoting The X's, there was this huge thing in some entertainment magazine where it was like, you know, Kristen Johnston's, sober Kristen Johnston's wine-guzzling attorney returns for a second, you know. And all of a sudden I was like, why is my character now a lush?
Right. I loved how that was funny in the piece that you wrote, that you're like, she's single. She's in her 40s.
Yeah.
She's childless.
Yeah.
Like, we have to make her a lush
yeah.
too?
Yeah, just because I am?
Right.
Don't blame her. And then the other thing that I bring up there, which was crazy, and it happened literally right before the Times went to print, so I couldn't really fold it in as much as I wanted to. But when
the Cory Monteith thing.
The terrible Cory Monteith's terrible passing, and about 2 days after he died, I was at an event in Washington trying to get addicts to go to rehab, not jail.
Right.
And so somebody talked, a press person, and they said, if Cory Monteith is a drug addict, how do you, you know, or something about his, and I said, look. If it's drugs in his system, I'm not surprised
right.
that he's dead, because that's what happens to addicts.
Right.
So all of a sudden, I started getting death threats on Twitter, literally like, you are the worst, because the headline was actress not shocked by
right.
Cory Monteith's death.
Right.
And I was just like, that's not what I said.
Right.
You know, and I kept saying, oh, how sad it was. I mean, you know,
right.
Whatever. Anyway, so it's that stuff. It's that kind of stuff. It's this, like, what is it? They just sort of make it so much more scandalous and salacious.
Right, and they're just chasing hits. It's so awful.
And they don't ever write the good stuff.
No.
Ever.
No, because, you know,
yeah.
people supposedly don't.
Who wants to hear that I'm sober and happy?
Right.
They want to hear that I'm, you know, that I've relapsed or that, you know.
And so you found out about this story because of Twitter. You found out basically when people started telling
you. Yes, I was getting death threats on Twitter from Glee people.
And so you.
From the Gleeks.
And the way you decided to express this was through a piece, and you didn't know it was going to be published in the New York Times. You just basically wrote.
Oh no! Initially, I wrote an article that was called "Their Last Big Break," and it was going to be for Salon.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yes.
Jennifer Jimenez. I don't know how to pronounce her last name.
Oh, it's going to be for her sober book.
Yes,
Jennifer
sober
Jimenez.
Book. Sorry,
okay, yeah.
Jennifer Jimenez, and I love. I mean, I think she's so cool.
We got sober together.
You did?
Yeah, but she then left, did more research, and came back. But yeah,
right.
No, I've known her. Like,
but she's a very
forever.
Cool person. I only know her through social media,
yeah.
but I love what she's doing.
Yeah.
Soberbook.com. I just think it's great, because why should I be the only one allowed to tell my story?
Right.
You know, everybody should be able to, and I think it's really cool. Anyway, with that said, I said, can I write something for you? And she said, of course. And I wrote something that was very critical of Dr. Drew.
Right. And so, she was cool with that.
She was cool, but she also was like, you know, I don't think
right.
it would be appropriate, you know. And so I sent it to my friend Michael Musto, this writer,
yeah,
great
yeah.
columnist. And he sent it to the Times, and they said, you know, the editor called me, and she was like, we just did something on Dr. Drew, but we love this part of it.
Yeah.
So go into there.
Oh,
and so that's how it happened. Yeah, a lot. I rewrote most of it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was the response to that?
Positive.
Yeah.
Very. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because don't you think that I feel there are so many problems with the media and addiction, but the fact that
there are so many problems with the media.
Yeah. And there's so many problems with addiction.
Exactly.
Too.
So
but, like, the fact that basically use of drugs and alcohol is glorified, and then abuse is basically
yes.
Just pushed under the rug, yes. Or just, you know,
how do you say it? What do you say? There's a word I'm looking for.
I know.
Basically masturbate all over it. No, I'm seriously. Like, you're allowed to get, like, look at those housewives, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I try to. I can't.
Speaking of Jennifer Jimenez, she's on.
Right, I know. She's the only sane person there. I think the show should be about her.
I know.
No offense to anybody else. But, you know, look, it's a room full of very drunk people.
I know. Always.
I mean, really drunk and really messy people.
Yeah.
And I kind of think, what if I was 12?
Right.
13, 14, watching that.
Right, right.
Like, it's saying it's okay in a weird way. Not to take it. Look, people can party. I don't care.
Right.
People party around me all the time. I'm not one of those people.
Right.
But, like, let's just have a little bit of grace.
Well, and not only that, but also the behavior that's sort of, that you know, in order to sort of get screen time on those shows, I think you behave as horribly as you possibly can.
Yes, that's true.
And I consider it like, I used to...
Which is so gross.
I know. It's such a... Yeah.
Anyway.
But it's...
I'm confused about that show.
I am too, because I sort of thought I got pleasure out of watching it. And then I was actually telling my therapist that one night I watched it and then I went and read Julie Klausner's recaps. They're amazing.
No, I read hers every week.
I mean, amazing.
On Vulture.
And then
my
I read
God.
All 6,000 comments. And then I woke up in the morning and I wanted to die. And I was like, maybe this is toxic behavior for me to be. But basically, I used to consider watching The Real World like the equivalent. If I couldn't get to a meeting, I'm like, oh, okay, if I watch The Real World, I'll remember why it is I don't drink. Because
why?
Because
they were so wasted.
Because they're always drunk. Like, it's always drunk people with perfect bodies you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And I do feel a little bit like The Real Housewives. Like,
but is that really a meeting, or is that sort of a campaign? You know what I mean?
It was more just say no. It was more like if I, you know, in a pinch, if I couldn't do anything else, at least I could justify watching The Real World.
All right, alcoholic.
But The Real Housewives, I mean, I understand their instincts, their basest instincts to sort of like somebody, one of their friends hurts them, so they go and they talk badly about them to somebody else. Like, I understand that because that's the 12-year-old inside of me.
Right. We've all done that.
Yeah, but it's like a meeting to see why I don't want to do it.
Right, right. Well, there was somebody commented and they were like, they were defending something said on Twitter, and they were saying, you know, haven't we all, you know, said something dumb, you know, when we're drunk? Could you imagine with a camera pointed to your face? And I responded, well, then don't get drunk when a camera's pointed in your face.
Right.
Like, or at least, you know, keep it down.
Right.
Have two.
Right.
Don't have 20.
Right. Right.
Because you look like an idiot week after week.
I know.
And it's just embarrassing. And I feel embarrassed for women.
I know.
I just do. I'm sorry. And I love Bravo. I love Andy Cohen. He's one of my dearest friends. But it just bothers me.
I know.
And the viciousness on Twitter and social media, too, about it.
I know.
The pro, I'm team this, I'm team that.
Right.
You know, the ganging up. And it's just crazy. Grown women, like, acting like...
I know. I know. And the thing that was like the toxicity for me actually was I realized that I'd watch the show, then I'd read all the comments, and then I'd get to feel superior because, like, here these women sort of have these things that I supposedly want.
Right.
And I'm like, well, I don't behave like them. And the comments are all about sort of, you know, I think internet commenting is just basically like, I feel powerless in this universe. And so I'm going to try to, you know, exact
some
power.
But some people just also have a comment.
I feel like... very rarely. I mean, most of the
I don't read the comments.
But like the awful ones.
Usually I don't. I do on Just Say Jen.
What's that?
Oh, you'd love her. She's just funny. It's a blog.
Okay.
It's a blogger on Twitter. I follow her on Twitter and she's funny. And she writes these really cruel things, but very well written.
Right.
And very, just blind items.
Right.
And then, her biggest target is Leanne Rimes. But she, and I don't really care either way, but she really writes so funny. She has the greatest skill. And I find the comments after that, for the most part, are really funny. And
well,
like,
right. And same with Julie Klausner's.
Yeah.
You know, if they heighten, certain writers can heighten the material. So it's sort of like if a company is toxic, it's
because if you read the comments on TMZ or whatever, it's like, you know, she's an ass, or you know, suck my cock or whatever.
Cock spelled C.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly. There's nothing better than that troll insulting you with a misspelled word.
Oh, it's great.
It makes my day.
Do you fight back at trolls?
Yeah, well, I do once or twice.
Right.
To shame them.
Right.
Because I'm so much smarter than them usually.
Right.
I mean, sometimes I'm not. But right. for the most wow. part, yeah, I could spell at least.
Yeah.
and really, really funny stories. Once there was this guy, a Twitter guy, who wrote after I was on Anderson Cooper, mm-hmm. and he wrote something really, you know, he was like, oh, you know, Kristen Johnson's so boring and grating. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote back to him.
And he included
no,
your
no,
handle
he did
in
not.
It. Okay, okay.
But I was looking for
yeah.
the clip of the Anderson Cooper
okay,
show, so I found
tweet,
it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I wrote back and I said something like, you know, that when your book comes out, I hope you're as dull and, you know, whatever
right.
as you can be. Anyway, we had this exchange. The next day he went, he didn't tell me this. His name's Fagsy Malone.
Oh my God, you're like best friends with him on
okay,
Twitter.
Yeah. He went out and bought Guts the next day and he's been sober ever since.
Oh my God.
Isn't that amazing?
So he was just like really threatened by the fact that you were
yeah.
talking about sobriety, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's
but
crazy.
So that happens, and that's happened a couple times, not quite like that, but where I've become like friends with the person.
Wow.
Afterward, you know?
Yeah.
Because like they just, you know, most celebrities probably don't run their own Twitter, I
right,
guess.
Right, right.
So it's some assistant, or they just say, I'll be in, you know, Tuskaloo,
right.
Missouri next
There's
week.
There's a man here. I don't
Yeah, that's
alarm
my
you.
Roommate.
Okay, good.
Sorry.
You want to pause?
Yeah. Okay, so luckily we were not killed by that man.
No, he was my roommate, so that's good.
So, but we were talking about, okay, so before we were talking about Twitter, we were kind of finishing that. But
yeah.
just, but the interesting how you can turn a sort of incredibly hostile
yeah.
interaction into one
yes.
that is an actual friendship.
Or you block them. You know,
yeah.
if they're unwilling to budge,
yeah.
you know, I usually give it like two chances. Like
yeah.
I'll be like, what crawled up your ass today?
Right.
You know, and if they're like, oh, you know, sometimes they'll be like, oh my God, I love you.
Right,
you know
right.
I mean?
Well, they don't actually think you're really reading it. I mean, you sort of brushed
don't.
On that.
That's
so it doesn't cross
thing.
Their mind
yeah.
that you're an actual
and
person.
And I do. I try,
yeah.
I try to read all of them, and I try to respond to as many as I can.
Right,
I mean, you know,
right.
It's impossible to do all of them, but yeah.
Well, so, but I would love to just briefly go through your history in terms of the addiction. So you,
okay.
because I read, and I think it was even in the Fix story, that you started drinking in high school, like
yes.
like we do.
No, like an alcoholic.
Right,
yeah.
right. And you
I didn't
were,
think blackouts were weird.
No, or throwing up.
Yeah, no.
It's really
no
not
problem.
Weird.
Yeah.
And you, but it said, I mean, you were stealing pills too. Were you already doing the pills?
No, I was not. No,
okay. So
no.
just the drink, just drinking?
Just drinking. The pills started, in Los Angeles. Well, you know.
Yeah.
Where else would it start?
But you know, that's the thing is people will always, do they do this? And they say, oh, LA, Hollywood made you
yeah.
an addict.
Yeah. No. And that's not true.
Not true.
Not true. The thing that I actually touch upon in that New York Times article is that we keep referring to articles. It's so boring.
It's not. It's
but no, is the fact that, you know, of all the hundreds of thousands
right.
of people in recovery or addicts that I've spoken to, talked to, heard from, met, I mean, everywhere across the country, not one of them has been famous.
Right.
So, you
right.
know, it's not just Hollywood.
Yeah.
You know, do I think that we're probably more prone? Yeah.
But I think it's people who are attracted to Hollywood are probably more likely to be addicts more than the environment. You know, I think that anybody who's drawn to...
No, this is what I say in gut. Look.
Yeah.
If you have, you know, you have a low self-esteem
right.
combined with a deep need for approval
yeah
and disposable income
right
bye-bye that's the recipe
that's yeah
all you need
as they say also it's somebody famous said this if you took the country on its side and shook it all the loose pieces would fall to LA
they would what I don't even get that
let's say you took the country
yeah
and you put it on its side and you shook it
yeah
all the loose pieces would fall to LA
I don't really get what that means.
That means like the loose, the
kooks.
Yes.
Okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
It was stupider than you realized.
No, I bet
was.
It's. I bet they said it better than you said it.
No,
not really.
And it's really actually some famous person. I will.
Okay.
In the show notes that I don't do, I
okay.
will explain who that is.
Okay.
So you're doing.
I get what you're.
And so.
But I don't live in LA. I live in New York.
Okay.
I'm here right now shooting the show, my TV show, The Exes.
Right. So, right.
But that's, I'm only here, you know, a couple months out of the year.
Right. So, and you grew up on the East Coast, correct?
No, I grew up in the Midwest.
Okay.
Nice research, Anna.
No, come on. I was
teasing you.
Okay. So
I grew up in Milwaukee.
Okay. Okay.
And, but I spent, you know, one semester, I spent so much time as a foreign exchange student. First in Sweden, mm-hmm. and then in Colombia, South America. I could not wait to go. Mm-hmm. And then when I was 17, NYU.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I've been, now I live very close to where my dorm was.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's really weird.
And you prefer New York to LA?
I do. I, you know, the winters,
yeah.
I'm getting old. I'm like, ooh.
Gets harder
now
every
I get it.
Yeah.
Where's
yeah.
Boca? Uh-huh. But no, I really do. Just, you know, for what we're talking about. Also, I just like knowing people that aren't in the business.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
talking
yeah, yeah.
to them about yeah. things. I'm not trying to be snooty. I also love the business. I think it's fun to talk about.
Right.
But it's just, I don't like it being my whole life.
Right, right,
but
right.
I've softened towards LA a lot as I've grown up.
Right.
I know. I used to hate it.
Oh, really?
Oh, well, yeah, because I became an addict here. And, you know, I thought it was just, you know, by the end of Third Rock, I was just like over it all.
Right.
And now I've become, you know, I really like, you know, there's a lot of good here.
There's a lot to like.
Yeah.
So you did not think you were an addict. You just thought you were, you know, doing what you felt like doing.
Right. What everybody did.
What everybody you were around did.
Yes, exactly.
And at what point did
in
it
high
start?
School?
Yeah. At what point did it start to seem like maybe this isn't the way everyone else is?
Huh. That's a great question. Pretty late, like mm-hmm. probably in my late 20s when I realized, like, you know, me and my best friend Jackie would go out, you know, all the time and just have a glass. You know, I was never a rager. You know, mm-hmm. I never went to like clubs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I did once or twice. But, you know, I love dinner parties, sitting with a friend, having some wine, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And she and I would go out like 3 or 4 times a week just to this restaurant right around from where we lived and have our wine and da da. And then one day she was just like, oh no, I'm not going to have, I'm on a diet or whatever. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a big deal to her.
Right.
And I remember kind of going, I couldn't do that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't do that. And then, it just was a slow dawning.
Yeah.
And then once the pills came in, it kicked it into high gear.
Yeah.
Crazy.
And so you started to be prescribed pills around the same time?
No. I started to be prescribed pills. Around maybe, let's see, I guess that what I was just referring to was probably in my mid-20s. And then I think my first moment with Mr. Morphine was because of an actual migraine. In my late 20s.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it was a very slow romance.
Right.
I didn't dive right in.
Right, right, right.
I wasn't like Scarface, you know what I mean?
Right.
It took a long time. By the time Third Rock was over and I went to New York, it got bad.
And it was morphine or just a lot of opiates?
No, any derivative of opium.
Yeah, yeah.
Of opiates, sorry.
And so here, you know, like this massive dream comes true. You get on this hit show.
I know.
And were you able to appreciate that? Do you think that the pills were preventing you from that?
No, I was so scared of it. Listen, Anna, I mean, that's really what the entire book is really about, I think, is about coming to terms with that. It's mm-hmm. more than that, more than addiction almost. I didn't understand, and I'm not ungrateful. I'm not spoiled. It's just more. Listen, when you become famous and whatever, it's more than anyone deserves. You
right,
know what I mean?
Right, right, right.
Like you're like, what are all these presents doing here?
Right,
Emmys, and I didn't get it. You know,
right.
And it's not like I thought I wasn't a good actress.
Right.
It's just that I was like, this is too much. And for me, the biggest problem was being stared at. Because I've been so tall since I was a kid.
Right.
So I immediately sort of correlated it with some people making fun of me.
Right.
Or thinking
right.
I looked weird or I
right.
was a freak.
Right.
And honestly, it's only been since sobriety that in 7 years, I'll be 7 years in March.
Oh, congratulations.
March 10th. Anyway, so in the last 7 years that I've started to just go, this is fine. It's just my life. It's just what it is. And how are you? And, you know, people are really nice for the most part.
Yeah. I mean, unless they're on Twitter, in which case you turn them all around.
Yeah, but, you know, 95% of the people on Twitter are fantastic.
No, and it's, I think this is interesting because I think most people say, well, what are you talking about? You would get all these presents and people are looking at you and right. that sounds great. And they literally do not understand how you couldn't be happy every day of your life with that.
Okay. Think of it like, what's a good analogy of, you know, how those people talk about when they lose all that weight, they have one of those, you know, those operations mm-hmm. and they lose all that weight, mm-hmm. but they still feel fat.
Yes.
And
yes.
So they can't
gastric
comprehend
bypass.
It. So that's kind of what it is. You're still who you are.
Right.
But you're all of a sudden this other person.
Right.
What?
Right.
And then you're sort of. They tried it, the press and whatever they made, you know, for like years, they tried to make me this hot, you know, like one of those hot LA girls.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, ew, I'm so not that.
Really? You never felt like that?
Never. No. Look, have I had moments where I'm like, I'm looking good.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
I'm not an asshole. But like, I, you know, I'm not, you know, What I'm talking about is not even really about a track level of attractiveness.
Right, right, right.
What
it's
I mean is
felt.
Like, you know, like one of those girls.
Right, right.
Like one of those girls that goes to the strip and like.
Right,
and
right.
I just was never that girl. But well, they tried to make me it. It was weird. Like who I'm dating and lying about like, you know, I'm dating Charlie Sheen or whoever. I'm like, what? No.
Right. Well, and also, don't you think that the more the world tries to treat you like you're special, the harder it is to be humble and to be kind and to be all of those things. I mean, I've even found that in my brief glimpses
You're
into that.
Absolutely right. That's a really smart way of putting it.
And it's alienating, actually.
Alienating. Exactly. I felt like a freak, like a fucking freak. And I lived alone during the Third Rock time. I had this great little house in Laurel Canyon, and it was beautiful. And I midway through Third Rock, I broke up with my boyfriend, who was really my only, like, sort of stability here.
Right.
And I was all alone every night, you know, and I was like, people don't even know.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's lonely. It can be. I've chosen to make it not lonely.
Right.
Now.
Right.
But it's hard work to remain sane-ish.
Well, I think that fame, I've just seen it, freezes people emotionally in the same way addiction does.
Yes, yes, yes. It does so much. I think when you become famous, unless you work really hard, you literally are captured at that moment and that's it.
Yeah.
And then, because I remember, like, same way with addiction, every year it was like, nothing's happened. You know how, like, at birthday or Christmas, you'd go, like, what happened this year? You know, whenever you have your, like, moment of, like, what'd I do? Okay. And then I did this. And then, you know, I had this kid. And then I met this person. Whatever. And every single year, it was like, no, exactly the same.
Really?
Everything was the same.
Even though it was good.
No, it was. It was the work was great.
Right.
That's 6 hours.
Right, 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 right. There's
the
still another 20.
The rest of my day was terrible.
Right.
Was truly terrible.
Right.
Truly bad. I mean, I was just in a terrible depression. I don't know how else to explain it. I know it's hard for people to understand. I get it. You know, I'm not expecting them to. But look, everybody's got their own hell. You know? It's like when you go to rehab and the girl next to you is like, my father raped me and da-da. And I'm like, Jesus, well.
Right.
Oh, I have to, but you know what? We each have our own levels.
It doesn't diminish the pain of one's
Everybody's
own experience.
Got their own story.
And
that's just the deal. And let me just say this, please. Getting the X's now, being able to do this television show, which is on TV land, it's not a huge deal, whatever. I think it's fantastic. But it has been one of the greatest times of my life because it's on the same lot that we shot Third Rock. It's one stage over. And I'm with Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm able to do it again, but as a normal person.
That's awesome.
You know, as a sober human being. A self-aware person.
Yeah.
And happy. So it's been a beautiful thing.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't realize it was the same lot.
Yeah,
it's
amazing.
A redo.
It's amazing.
So, and so you, as you detail in the book, and if anybody is listening to this and has not read the book.
Well, by now they're all asleep. Sorry. That was just a joke.
First of all, if you have, like, just stop listening to this and go buy the book and then pick this up.
For God's sake.
I mean, seriously.
Or the audio book, which is supposed to be, everybody loves, but yeah.
Okay, and you're obviously reading it.
Duh.
Okay, you know, some people don't.
I know.
Like, I listened to Nick's book on tape, and it's Nick Sheff's book on tape, and it was some, like, old man.
Why didn't Nick read it?
I don't know. He probably didn't want it.
Well, yeah, but look, if you're an actor and you write a book.
Yeah, of course you're going to read it.
Pretty much. But you, amazingly, how many hundreds of people have asked, do you read it?
Right.
And I'm like, no, Sally Kellerman read it. Darth Vader's reading it.
But I read it. I read it instead of listening to it, and I could not put it down. I mean, one has a certain idea. You're like, okay, you know, and by now you guys have read the reviews, and you know that this isn't, you know,
it's not a stink bomb.
Yeah, and you don't even, like, I don't have books written by celebrities. I don't know if they've written them. You know, it's like, in this
They don't.
Was,
no, they don't.
Yeah.
They don't.
I know.
None of them do.
I know. I wrote one for someone who never even read it.
Right. That's embarrassing.
It's true.
Well, I think that some people, the more well-known folk, think talking into a tape recorder is writing, but that's talking.
Yeah, I know.
That's officially not
You don't
writing.
Have to be well-known to think that. People literally think writing. They're like, well, I'm good with words. I'm a writer. It's like, no.
Well, then why don't you write something?
Yeah.
Let's see it. But anyway, I loved books. I've loved books my whole life.
Right.
Any kind, not snooty. I'll take Anna Karenina and I'll take Stephen King. I don't care.
Right.
I love them all. I love the written word. I just think it's amazing. And it really saved me when I was a kid. And it still does to this day. But so I've never written a journal. I didn't know if I could write. But my friends used to say, you know, like, you are seriously the best. Like, when I'd go on a rip, on a tear.
Right.
In an email.
Right.
They'd be like, dude, this is. So I had a little niggling Inkling, that maybe I could do. And then when I started writing, and I'm not saying I'm brilliant by any means, but for a first
it's
book.
It's a freaking great book.
Thank you.
It really is.
Oh, that's so nice. Well, I loved every minute of writing it.
You did?
I loved it. It was like, yes, because it's this other thing I never knew I had. And that's, again, another gift of sobriety. Like, you know, all of a sudden you're like a teacher and a writer and all these things I never thought I'd do. Because I don't like just being an actor.
You know, I like
doing other things.
Right. But so what you talk about in the book is basically you go to London to do a play and quite literally your guts exploded as
a
result.
To give the story. I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, basically.
That's only going to tempt them more.
Yeah. Basically from my very, very long love affair with pills and booze, but mostly the pills, because, you know, people don't understand that like Vicodin or things like that, they're coated with things that eat away at your stomach.
Right.
If you take 50 a day.
Right.
Or, you know, 60 or 100, whatever. And were you ever pills?
I did Ambien a lot.
Yeah, but I
enjoyed my pain pills, but it wasn't the thing I did
all
the time.
Yeah. Yeah. It was my thing. And booze, but like the combo. And anyway, so I was for a year, I was just felt, I looked horrific. And I was so bloated and just, and I would have terrible heartburn. I mean, agonizing in my throat.
Right.
And then I was doing the play. We open, huge hit.
Yeah.
The next day, I'm peeing.
Right.
Sorry,
right.
It's the truth. And I rip it.
Yeah.
And my stomach rips and I become septic, which means that the matter that was in my stomach sort of ended up in my elbow or wherever.
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
And so you then have to go into the hospital in London.
Well, I have to call the paramedics who were very unwilling to help me. And, yes, I go into the whole story. I remember every single second like it was yesterday. Anyway, so I end up being in the hospital, major emergency surgery that 4 years before I would have died for sure. I mean, it's one of those, because of the infection and that thing. And they were able to go in arthroscopically.
Okay.
Basically, I was there a month, and then because I'm an addict. No, I was there 2 weeks, and because I'm an addict, I was like, I'm fine. And I left, and it became terribly infected. So I had to go back for a month and a half. So I was there 2 months.
And that it was there that you realized you needed to get sober?
Yes.
You drank and after that?
It was at the end of it, though.
Right.
I mean, literally, People need to read the book.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, I can't really talk about it. Otherwise, it's, you know, but yes, I had a moment of understanding.
Right.
Clarity.
Clarity, as they say.
As it's referred to.
And you went to treatment. And
I did. I got my own self to treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought maybe I could just be an alcoholic for a while.
Right.
You know, I'd just tell people I was lush.
Right.
But that flew out the window when I started to detox.
And of course, you know, your famous Sex in the City role as the big...
Right, the big Coke freak.
Yeah. What was... So, you were still...
I was a party animal. Not a party animal. I hate to say that because that makes me sound Paris Hilton-y. I was on the train. I was on the, I call it, the Autobahn to nowhere. Yeah, it was bad.
And...
I mean, I'm talking 2 bottles of wine a night.
Right.
40, 50 pills a day.
Right.
That's just to feel normal.
And I just can't believe you were functioning and you were memorizing lines and you were saying them.
I can't believe it either. And I really was.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there were moments of sloppiness, but for the most part, I got away with it.
And so then when you first got sober, did you know you were going to be open about it? Did you have any idea you'd
become... No, I was never
going
to tell a soul.
Okay.
Are you kidding?
So you were like, we're going to keep this under wraps.
No,
most people didn't know.
I was going to AA, you know, I was doing the whole thing.
Right.
Can we talk about it on the air?
We can, yeah.
Or
I mean,
don't
I don't
like
stop
to.
Anybody from talking about
oh,
it.
All right. Well, I don't think...
Yeah.
Anyway, I don't know if I it's cool with people, though.
You
I don't know
what?
Why. I don't understand the rule. Freaks me out.
It's you know, everybody's so different about it. I think that if it's something that helped save your life, like it seems crazy that you're not allowed to say this is the thing that helped save my life when there are all these people who say such terrible things about it.
I agree. But then if I relapse, all of a sudden everybody's going to be like, oh, well, see, AA doesn't work.
Trust
or
me,
whatever.
If you relapse, how is that going to make anybody think AA doesn't work?
Yeah. You're preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
I am somebody who believes out and proud.
Yeah.
And of course, anonymity of what
other
happens
people.
Within
and
a
yes.
meeting is sacred.
Yes.
That is an absolute.
Yes.
And I understand that.
Yes.
But the fact that I am given crap for talking about my own thing. So I'm going to talk about it.
Yeah.
So I was at, what was even the question? I don't know.
The question was, about not being open about it. You weren't going to tell a soul.
Oh, I was going to tell a soul. I was going to, you know, so people knew.
Right.
You know, my friends knew. I mean, you know, but I was pretty private because of, I think I was so scared of, like, you know, because the media makes fun of.
Yeah.
People who get sober.
Yeah.
You know, Lindsay, and look how many times she's gone. And look at this. I just didn't want to become another one of them.
Right.
So for 3 years, it was under wraps. And then finally, I needed the money.
Right. And so you said, I'm going to write a book.
Yeah.
And you go.
And I wanted to write a self-help book about something for kids, like for young girls.
And they were like, "Fuck that! We want your memoir."
They were like, "Well, once they read this email, they said, well, give me a sample of your writing." And I was like, I literally said to her, "I think I still have some term papers from college." She was like, "No," and I was like, "Oh, I have some." People say I'm a really good email writer.
Right.
I'll send you a couple.
Right.
So I sent her this one that I had written to my friend Chris, who was 2 weeks sober, and I. You know, had been five. No, he was 2 weeks sober, and I'd been like 6 months sober.
Right.
And I wrote this really long thing about my experience and how I felt and what was going on. And she read it, and she's like, "That's your book." And I was like, "I'm not writing about my addiction." And like literally 10 minutes later, it changed my life that moment.
Right. Yeah. Right. And so you spent a year writing it? A year and a half writing it.
Yeah.
And then it came out, and by then you were out and proud, or
I
it
had
just,
to be.
You had no choice. You had
to
go sell it.
Well, the very first moment I came out was on David Letterman.
Okay, and so the fact that you talked about Suboxone on David Letterman was considered a big deal, a scandal?
Well, I know, but I wasn't intending to. See, people think that you have, that's so scripted, and she knew he was going to... I didn't know any... All I knew was he was going to ask me about my addiction. You
right.
know. Because he read Guts, and he, you know, or one of his people did.
Right.
And so anyway, but I was there to plug my show.
Right,
you know?
Right.
So anyway, so he, so he's like, so did you, and he, for some weird reason, he asked if I
took
meds. I know,
that's so weird that he would even ask that.
And I just sort of felt like, I can't lie.
Yeah.
Yes, I did. I had help.
Yeah.
And he asked what, and I said Suboxone, and all of a sudden, oy, oy, oy.
What happened as a result of that?
Well, people on The Fix got mad at me.
But wait, that was... But you were on Letterman way before The Fix existed, right?
No.
Oh, that was... Okay.
It was around... No, the fix was around for a long
while. Okay.
No, I just remember getting lots of snarky comments about, I don't know, whatever. You know, you're not sober if you're on Suboxone, whatever. That's your opinion. Right. Mine is different.
Right, okay? Right.
I say whatever helps you not to use.
Yeah. I mean, look, they weren't even doing that when I was in rehab. And
doing what?
Suboxone. Putting people on Suboxone. Yeah. Well, they were detoxing people with Suboxone, but that not putting them on it forever,
right?
You know?
Well, the reason that I stayed on it as long as I did was because for me, it was actually a serious antidepressant.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was it hard to get off of, though?
No, because I did it over the course of like 6 months with a doctor.
And there was nothing?
It wasn't great for like 3 days.
Right.
But it was okay.
Right.
It was totally doable.
Right.
It's not, I mean, for me, but I also wasn't on a bunch. You know, I was on a very low dosage.
And what do you do to stay sober now?
What do I do to stay sober now? Well, at the moment, I stay sober because I have lupus. Yeah, I just
So how did you find out?
I want to answer your question because I think it's important. Here's my thing. I'm not crazy about what we were talking about within the whole 12-step thing of the use of anonymity and how it's been warped into meaning never talk about recovery at all.
Right. To some ignorant people. But yeah.
I agree.
But lots of them. Yes, I would agree.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
And for me, it does not mean that.
No.
And so I've become kind of mad at AA a little bit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, also because the only people who've ever like severely criticized or come down on like the, you know, I'm trying to open a school, which we'll talk about later. They're, you know, the negativity only comes from them.
From AA?
Yes.
But here's the thing. AA is like, you know, doesn't have a leader.
No, I understand, but I get it.
But it's from people within AA have been critical?
Yes. I don't care. I'm a big girl. You know, it's just more like I'm just like, I don't know if that's where I want to be right now.
Really?
Yeah. But I think self-care is, first of all, AA saved my life.
Right.
Okay. And I went for 2 years almost daily.
Right.
And I loved it.
Right.
And I loved the people I met and it changed my life.
Right.
Okay. So let's just get that.
Yeah.
But there also are some elements that personally I didn't groove to.
Right.
And I, you know, take what you need and leave the rest and blah, blah, blah. But after Guts came out, it became a little weird to show up.
Oh, did it? I mean, so people book. Would people say things to you?
They brought the book to being to sign it and stuff.
Right.
And that
just
felt weird.
Right. That I mean,
and they'd like be like, "It's my new big book."
Right.
And I'd be like, "Don't have it be whatever."
Right.
I don't want to be your big
book. But like,
it just got weird.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, but I think that there are weird freaks everywhere.
No. I'm okay.
I'm not saying
you know what I mean. I can handle some freaks.
It became uncomfortable for you. Yeah,
and I began to sort of be, you know, with the anonymous people.
Yeah.
This film that I did.
Oh yeah.
Which is basically, you know, brilliant. This documentary, but it's basically about the new movement in recovery and about being open about it.
Right.
Because here's the thing: when I was using. And I was in so much torment.
Right.
And I just wanted to do anything but use. I was like, I can't go there. Like, what is it? Some dusty church basement?
Exactly.
Like, with cold coffee and old men yelling at each other?
Yeah, and toothless and cigarettes.
Because you don't know anything. Because there's no representative.
Exactly.
Saying, not representative of AA, but somebody who's, like, been in recovery.
Yeah.
Who's healthy and happy and can talk about it.
Yeah.
And that's what I decided to do.
So. Exactly. And I think that is the most important thing. I mean, that's reason I do any of this, is that I thought about killing myself before I thought about going to AA.
Me too.
I thought it
was a much better option.
Toothless.
Much better
option. Yeah. And I was
like, I think a lot of people do.
And so just to show anybody that it's nothing like your brain is telling you it's like is
an
amazing thing.
No, that's not the thing. It's that no one has been given any information.
Yeah.
And I get that it should press and all that stuff. And I totally get that.
Right.
But the fact that in your community,
you're
not allowed to go like, oh, I got to go hit my AA meeting.
Right.
I'll see you later. You know, you're like, oh, I'm going to a doctor's appointment. And all
right.
You know what I mean? It's all this like subterfuge.
Yeah.
And it's just bullshit to me. It really is.
Yeah.
And it's gotten much less so in the last few years.
I know, it really has.
It really has opened up.
I know. But, I know. But I think people like you are one of the reasons for that.
I
in
do
a good
too.
Way.
Honestly, yeah. I really do too. You know, just sort of talking about it.
Yeah.
Being able to go on, you know, whatever, Wendy Williams.
Yeah.
Blah,
yeah.
blah, blah.
Having Letterman, you know, hear the word Suboxone.
Right.
You know what
but
I mean?
But also, you don't have to talk about your 12. You don't have to talk right. about how you got recovered. Nobody asks, you know, well, did you go to AA? You know, you don't have to talk about
right.
it.
Right, right.
You can just be like, yeah, I'm sober.
Yeah.
Cool. Whatever.
Yeah.
Moving on.
And
then you would be amazing once you are open about it, how many people will come up to you privately and go, I'm worried about my brother or
my
me,
sister or my mother. Yes.
It's unbelievable. And they can't talk to anybody.
I know. That. I know. It's true. But like, yeah. you know, but also, you know, I've been thinking in terms of this podcast and just what I'm doing, I want everybody has overcome something major in their life.
Right.
And so I want people, I want it to be about that. So what advice would you give anybody who's just thinks they can never overcome whatever it is, whether it's an addiction.
I get it. Listen,
yeah.
this is what I swear to God, I know I keep dropping the name of my book, but I really wrote Guts for that, for people like that. It was not an addiction book. It was a how did a leopard change her stripes
right.
at, you know, a million
right.
years old. Jeez. And, you know, it's if you, it, how do you at, I was 38 at the time. How do you take your whole life that you've been doing this one thing, this one way, and you're in this one place, and how do you change your literal DNA?
Right.
How do you change yourself?
Right.
And that's what I set out to do.
Right.
I think the best advice I can ever give anyone about anything is be honest with yourself and others.
Right.
Whatever that means to you.
Right.
But the moment you start telling the truth, not mean truth, like, yeah, your ass looks fat in those jeans.
Right.
But I mean, looking in the mirror or looking, you know, talking to yourself and saying, you know what, this isn't good. I have to right. admit to myself, I don't like being in this with this boyfriend or whatever
right.
it is. In this rut.
Right.
And there's a way to change it.
Yeah.
I can't answer that for you, but you know.
Right. But to know that you can change anything.
Oh my God. Yes. Because seriously, 7 years ago, I was the hottest mess you ever could. I mean,
right.
coke rocks dripping out of my nose.
Oh, there was this, cocaine too. I
well,
didn't know.
Some of it, you know, a friend of mine did it, so I would do it with her.
Right.
But you know, and I hated it, but I'd do it.
Right, right, right.
But yeah, it, you know, I was a mess, anything to be other.
Yeah.
And now I'm present. It's not easy.
No, it's not.
And the first year is the hardest.
Oh, that wasn't my experience, but.
Whatever. You were in the pink cloud.
Yeah, I was on such a pink cloud
oh,
for
yeah.
like 2 years.
Totally.
I'm like, I don't even need therapy. I'm never
yeah,
going to have
yeah,
another
yeah,
problem.
Totally. And then it crashed.
Oh, did it. Yeah, but I find that it's, you know, very
it's
like
very
peaks and valleys, you know.
But like, you know, your first Christmas. You know, your things sober that you've never, like New Year's Eve, whatever.
Right, right.
Your birthday, things that, celebrations, whatever, that you're like, I can't do this sober.
Right,
I mean,
right.
I still haven't gone to a wedding sober because I'm like, how do you do a wedding sober?
Right, right.
And that'll happen.
Yeah.
But you know, there are still firsts.
Yeah.
But every first for me was difficult because everything was accompanied by booze.
Right, right,
but the first time I ever went out to dinner with friends who drank.
Yeah.
And I was sober. It was the greatest feeling.
I know.
Because I did it. And
yeah.
it wasn't bad.
I know.
And I had fun.
I know.
It's just when people get sloppy that I get weirded out.
Yeah, my problem more is when I'm around people who all drink and then none of them are actual alcoholics, so they make it look fun. And you're I've done
yeah,
it twice while I'm trapped in like a foreign place, like in New Zealand where I'm.
Oh, that might be hard.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
My thing is when. You know, the thing is that's so funny is people are like, is it okay if I drink around you? And I'm like, yeah, look, I don't get cravings by
yeah.
looking at someone drinking.
Yeah.
I'll have a craving, which not anymore, really, thank God. But like at first, you know, at 4 o'clock on a Sunday, I'd be like, I need a drink. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Whenever I walk into a sushi restaurant, I still go, ooh, sake.
Oh, that's
you know,
interesting.
For a
yeah.
moment. But it's momentary.
I have that. It's so weird. I think I have it about dive bars. I saw some
Why
weird.
Why would you even go into a dive bar?
Not like fake dive bars. Like
oh.
St. Nick's, remember, on 3rd Street?
Yeah,
do you remember
no.
that?
No. Yeah, you don't go in those. I think it's best to stay away.
I drove by and I was like, wow, I just remembered what I love. Ooh, that
seedy
feeling. I bet you were
such a trashy whore.
No, not at all. I was the kidding. Opposite.
I'm joking.
I hung out with only gay men.
Well, honey.
I mean, yeah.
Welcome to my world.
So, okay. So I do want you to talk about SLAM.
Okay, great. What do you want to know?
Tell us what it, so it's an organization to have sober.
Okay, here's the deal. There are 35 sober high schools throughout the United States of America. There might be a little less or a little more now. I'm not sure. Okay. There are 4 in the Boston area alone. There are 0 in New York, city or state. Okay. Now, the University of Columbia did a survey recently. 1 out of every 3 U.S. teenagers meets the medical criteria
Jesus
for addiction.
Christ.
And there are some that say it's 1 out of 5. So it's in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Which means a lot.
Yeah.
1 out of every 70 kids in teens in the America will go to rehab. If they go to rehab and they go back to any kind of regular school, 90% of them will relapse.
Yeah.
80% within the first 30 days. I personally think it's closer to 100.
Right.
If a kid goes to a sober high school, 70% of them graduate drug and alcohol free.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So that's it. That's the no-brainer, right?
Right.
I've been fighting for years, for 6 years, to get this school, just to get a yes from the Board of Education.
In New York.
And they refuse.
Why?
Well, I don't. They kept giving us red tape. Questions. This insurance. Da 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 da. So we'd go back. We'd research. We'd bring it all back. No, here's this question. This question. We'd go back. Research. Bring it all back. Okay. So I mean, probably 7 times a no's, and finally I realized, you know what? They just don't want to have this problem.
Right.
They don't
want
it to exist.
Right.
And also, it was Bloomberg. You know, he wasn't exactly. He wasn't exactly kind to the education world of New York. So I think now with a new regime,
yeah,
I'm hoping it really happens.
But what
if anybody's interested, wait, please, please go to our really cool new, really jazzy new website. It's slamnyc.org, slamnyc.org.
And what about sober high schools elsewhere? Or is it just New York?
Listen, bitch, I got to handle New York.
Okay, yeah.
I don't know about anywhere else.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if it might be like not so much red tape somewhere else.
But we need it in New York.
We do.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, the teens in New York are I'm trying to think of the right word. I'm so dumb right now. But like statistically, they're much higher.
Yeah.
And so they need our help. And I don't want it to be a white school. I don't want it. I want it to be whoever needs the help, whoever wants the help.
Right. Right.
And, you know, small, probably 30 kids at first.
Right.
You know, and see where it goes.
Yeah, just one final question. So you realized you have lupus recently,
yes.
But you have been sick for a while.
Been really sick for 5 months. Yeah, since the summer. Like unable to walk upstairs, unable to hold my own head up. I needed a neck brace. Horrible. So I went to I've been to 17 doctors. I've been to the Mayo Clinic for 2 weeks. No one could figure it out. Finally, my 17th doctor, Dr. Wallace in L.A., was like, he tested my blood. He's like, you have lupus. I have lupus myelitis, which attacks, it's your own immune system attacking your spinal cord and your muscles.
What were the other 16 doctors not testing you for that?
I don't even know anymore. Like,
yeah.
I mean, I have like a book of what they tested me for. I mean, I went to the Mayo Clinic.
Right, right.
They did spinal taps.
Right.
MRIs. Blood tests. They took so much blood. The fact that nobody figured this out is insane. And so I'm thinking like, okay, I have means.
Yeah.
And I have access to really good doctors.
Right.
And even I couldn't figure it out.
Right.
What about this person in, you know, in St. Louis, wherever?
Right.
What the hell are they going to do?
Right.
So I don't know. I think lupus, they want me to become like rah-rah lupus.
Right.
And I can't because I'm rah-rah addiction.
Right.
But I still am. I do think that there's a big problem with a lot of people have it.
And so you're being treated for it with medicine
Yes, I'm being treated for it with pretty intense. I went to the hospital for a weekend and da-da. The biggest problem with it is that it all happened during the show, the exes.
Right.
So I tried to do as much as I could, but I did have to bow out for two episodes.
Right.
I just couldn't. I had to go to Mayo Clinic.
Right.
And so that was really weird and really hard for me because it's my baby.
Yeah.
I love it so much. And but I'm feeling like 80% better.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And so you're back functioning.
I'm functioning. There's a lot more to go.
Right.
I have a lot of, lots of infusions to look forward to.
Right, right.
And lots of meds, but I'm doing really good.
And are you going...
And I'm back at work, which is great.
Are you going to write another book?
I'm writing it.
Okay. Yeah. A sequel of sorts.
No.
Totally different.
It'll be a sequel because it's the next book.
Right. But it's also
about
you.
But it's not
going
to be Guts Part 2.
Right, right.
No. I'll later, when we're done with this, I'll show you.
Listeners, I'm getting an exclusive. Yeah. You're not. No. Thank you so much. People can find you on Twitter at
Hey Joe the Smartass.
Yes. And
and my Facebook page. Come say hi on Facebook or just...
I love your Facebook page.
Thank you.
It's like a place where people talk about addiction.
And there's lots of really great conversations of different viewpoints. Like what we were talking about, the anonymity thing.
Yeah.
You know, people like come on and give different views. I love it. It's great.
Yeah.
Arguments. As long as you're respectful. If you're not, you're
yeah,
out.
You get iced.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you so much.
Thank
it's
you,
such a
Anna.
Pleasure.
You too, darling. Bye.
That was good, you guys, right? Did we get into it? The real stuff? I think we did. I definitely think we did. And all I can say is I hope you enjoyed that interview. I know that I did. And please tell your friends. Please tweet, Facebook, March. Yeah, start a march. That would be an amazing. Have an after party pod float where you yell about from a megaphone about how people should be listening to this. Now, considering that, just tweeting about it and going and giving it a review on iTunes doesn't sound so hard now, does it? So thank you. Thank you for listening. It means a lot. Please keep telling me if you are listening, and I would love to give you a shout out in a future episode. So until next time, after partiers, out.